It is 8:31. We have with us live in the studios once again, John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. A busy, busy week. And so we are going to start out, as we always do, with local. And you'd think we were done with elections, but apparently not.
No, actually, we had an election last November which required another election. This was the Republicans' stealth effort to try and run the elections in King County. They got past an initiative in the finest Tim Eyman tradition of appealing-sounding initiatives that have a hidden purpose. This came out of the Gregoire Rossi governor's race in 2004, where the Republicans were somewhat ludicrously claiming vote fraud in King County. That was laughed out of court by a judge. But as a result, they launched an initiative last year to elect the elections director with the idea that they could run partisan Republicans for this nonpartisan office and control the elections process in King County. Well, sure enough, the initiative passed, and so on February 3rd, and the ballots arrived in the mail this week. This is the first all-mail election in King County. We are electing our elections director in King County, and there are six people running. Two of which are, in fact, those partisan Republicans, both of whom are office holders and have relatively high ID, which will help them along with their base of support, which will help them in a low turnout special election. Those are David Irons, who lost his race for King County Executive against Ron Sims in 2005, in part due to allegations that he beat his mother, and Pam Roach, who gives new and elegant meaning to the term. I can't actually say that. Let's just say she's crazy. but she's notorious, and Pistol Packing Pam is notorious in Olympia for being off the deep end, even for Republican wingnuts. Both of them are running for elections director, even though neither one of them knows a darn thing about running elections. Neither do three of the other four candidates, including one, Chris Clifford, who's a prominent Seattle school board candidate. Somebody forgot to clue him in that this is not about the Seattle schools. And this is what happens when you have an elected race for a position that's actually highly technical. It is not easy to run an elections department, particularly in one of the largest counties by population in the United States. And so you need somebody who actually has experience and can do the job of running an elections department. Fortunately, there is one such person on the ballot, and that person is the current elections director, Cheryl Huff, who not only holds that post, but has really done an excellent job of helping to clean up some of the sloppiness and problems at King County elections over the past couple of years that she's held the job. If Cheryl had not done such a good job, this would be easier to do, but I would encourage you to vote early and vote as many times as you possibly can for Cheryl Huff for elections director.
All right. Well, speaking of elections, I swear we voted on this before, but again, it's like the horror movie, project that will not die, the tunnel.
That was an advisory vote, and guess what? They didn't take our advice.
No, not even when 70% of voters rejected a tunnel as a replacement for the Alaskan Way Viaduct in 2007. Still, we're getting the tunnel rammed down our throats. And the most shocking thing about this plan that Ron Sims and Greg Nichols and Christine Gregoire have all agreed on, the worst thing about it is that not only is the state going to just go ahead and build the tunnel, but the city has to pay for the surface boulevard option too, because as part of the package that they agreed on, the state will put up the money for the tunnel, and somehow, even though they've only committed less than half the funds for it, they say they're going to find a way to finance the rest of the tunnel if it's within cost estimates, which I seriously doubt. The county and the city are going to have to pay for surface improvements anyway to Alaskan Way and Western Avenue, which the plan looks exactly like what the surface boulevard would have been if the state had opted for that. So not only are we getting a tunnel that we really don't need, that is going to be pretty much inaccessible from downtown. It's supposed to be a throughway, but But in fact, it's going to encourage people to drive rather than take transit. It's going to keep people in their cars long past the time when we have admitted that you have to get people out of their personal automobiles if we're going to do anything about global warming.
Oh. So. All right.
Did you want to say anything about that, Job?
I think that pretty well sums it up. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the other things to mention about this is that the state is kicking in a much larger share of construction costs for this, because of course not only is this this option more expensive than the option that was rejected by voters 2 years ago, as among other things being too expensive, but it also is something that has not really been well planned, and so the costs are likely to go up quite a bit before the construction is actually done.
My understanding is it hasn't been engineered at all, so that the cost estimate right now is just a number they've pulled out of the air.
Yeah.
They really have no clue.
Yeah, it's likely to be much, much higher before we're all done. And that's coming out of state coffers at a time when we're looking at severe budget cuts at the state level.
All right. Well, moving on to national, and speaking of numbers pulled out of the air, maybe you can, Maria, give us a update on the new bailout package.
Yeah, the Democrats in the House presented the big bailout package that Obama will be voting on, or Obama will probably be signing as soon as he is inaugurated. One third of that package is $825 to $850 billion. I've seen both estimates, so I'm not sure which one is true. But one third of the amount is set aside for tax cuts that actually won't provide any stimulus at all. And I mean, economists from across the board, from right and left, have said you got to drop the tax cuts if you want to make real meaningful economic stimulus in the package, because tax cuts have largely been proven to have minimal impact on the economy, particularly when it's only a little $500, you know, payroll tax that people are going to get maybe $5 back in their check, in their paycheck every month. I mean, that is not going to help people go out and spend like they were doing 2 and 3 years ago. Only $90 billion of the package is for infrastructure projects. That's about 11% of the total, when in fact past experience has shown us that the things that help the economy the most are these big infrastructure projects. And of course, my last complaint about it is that the other side of the bill is missing completely, and that's the part of the bill that would plug the hole that's hemorrhaging federal dollars into the quagmire in Iraq and Afghanistan. If you're going to start spending money on boosting the economy here at home, we have to stop spending money and throwing it down that black hole in the Middle East.
All right. Other economic news?
Yeah. I wanted to talk briefly about a couple of bad Obama picks. Job is going to probably talk about this a little bit more. His pick for Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, there's a lot of problems with him, but when the news broke this week that when he worked for the IMF from 2001 to 2004, he just neglected to pay his payroll taxes. Now, the IMF employs a lot of foreign people. In fact, probably most of their employees are foreigners. They're not U.S. citizens. And for that reason, they don't withhold payroll taxes as a policy from their employees' checks. But they tell their U.S. citizens, look, we are not withholding payroll taxes for you, but you are required to pay them, and it is your responsibility. And there's every evidence that Geithner got that information from the IMF, his employer, and that he even signed a form asking them, can you reimburse me for the payroll taxes that I will be paying? And yes, I will be paying them. Yet he neglected to do it. And it wasn't until he was caught by the IRS in an audit that he was forced to pay his payroll taxes for 2003 and 2004. And he did do that, but he didn't pony up and pay for his taxes from the years 2001 and 2002 until the Obama transition team told him he needed to do it. he did it. And then the transition team turned around and said, okay, now we're going to put you up for nomination as Treasury Secretary.
Yeah, now we're going to put you up for to oversee billions and billions and maybe trillions of dollars as one of the most powerful cabinet members of our administration.
And to be in control of the IRS. What I want to point out, too, which is what the Treasury Secretary
yes.
does, and what I want to point out, too, is that these are not war taxes that he refused to pay, as many people do follow their conscience and say, I'm not paying federal income tax because most of it goes for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. He, in fact, paid his federal income taxes. It's his Social Security and Medicare taxes that he didn't pay. And I have to say, that is just sleazy. So the
I want to come back to Geithner, but go ahead talk about the SEC.
The other bad Obama pick is Obama's choice to head the SEC, Mary Shapiro. This is the top, going to be the top regulator of the financial industry in the United States. And Mary Shapiro's experience, she had led a regulatory body called FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. That's Wall Street's self-regulatory body. It was created in July 2007 by merging the regulatory apparatus of NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange. And its main task was to protect investors by monitoring securities sold through brokerage accounts and making sure that the financial industry wasn't ripping off investors, particularly small investors. And in that task of heading FINRA, she completely missed Madoff's fraud, even though FINRA had reviewed his books several times. Also, she missed problems with mortgage-backed securities and other derivatives. When questioned by reporters, she simply said at the time, oh, there may be some problems with them, but we're relying on the rating agencies to tell us which ones are good and which ones are bad.
How's that working for you?
It didn't work at all. And Shapiro, before she headed FINRA, oversaw the NASDAQ's regulatory arm. And under her term as head of that regulatory body, fewer fines were levied against companies, and they were much lower than in previous years. So really, and this was at a time when she became the highest paid regulator in the world, really, as the head of FINRA, she was making $3.1 million a year. So this was a bad trend for anybody who's going to head a regulatory agency, and she was just a bad pick.
Yeah, Bush's financial picks in general remind me an awful lot of foxes and hen houses.
You mean Obama's?
Obama. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, did I say Bush? there's a reason for that, because it's very reminiscent of Bush's picks. They're very much Wall Street insiders who are hostile to regulation. We have Tim Geithner, who obviously his role at the IMF was structural adjustment programs for third world countries. He's a protege of Henry Kissinger, a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, among many other things.
He has no experience in private industry that I can tell.
No,
work.
And figuratively, if not literally, he's Henry Paulson's fraternity brother.
It's a guy born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
The old quote about George Bush thinks he's a self-made man because he was born on third base. In any event, that's Geithner. You also have the return of Larry Summers. He was Clinton's Treasury Secretary, was rumored to be in line for that pick for Obama, but instead he's become Obama's chief economic advisor. And this is a very worrisome pick also. Summers basically has been on the wrong side of almost everything. He was wrong on free trade, he's wrong on deregulation,
he pushed heavily.
Very, very hard for those policies, and will continue to do so. He's very much an advocate for policies that have benefited the very wealthy and really hurt everyone else. And this is the main guy who's going to be advising Obama on economic policy. It's very, very worrisome. We mentioned last week some of the environmental picks and some of Bush's inner circle. This is all from a feature that ran this current issue and this coming issue that will be out this week on Obama's cabinet picks, and we go into much more detail on them in that issue. It's available available online now at www.eatthestate.org. But just to hit some of the other highlights, in general, we haven't covered his national security people, and we haven't covered his social services. The social services are actually fairly good, but the national security is pretty worrisome, and let's hit a few highlights of those. Department of Justice Eric Holder will unquestionably be an upgrade over anything puked up by the Bush administration for this post, but he's still been problematic. He opposes torture now, but in 2002 advised the Bush administration to disregard the Geneva Conventions. He was involved in the pardoning under Bill Clinton of Mark Rich, which is highly problematic. He also, during the Bush administration time, went into practice as a private lawyer defending corporate clients, including defending Chiquita Brands against accusations that they helped fund paramilitaries to assassinate union leaders in Colombia. So, again, a very problematic pick. Robert Gates, the Department of Defense, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's a measure, really, of how conservative the DC culture has become over the past three decades, that Gates, who could have been seen as highly problematic during the Reagan administration, when they actually withdrew his name for contention for heading the CIA because he was so controversial, now he's considered a mainstream pick in this sort of wise elder who's a moderate consensus builder. He was up to his neck in Iran-Contra. He was involved in a number of the CIA's failures of the late 80s and early 90s when he was first deputy director and then ran the CIA. He's done nothing in the past 2 years to rein in the excesses of either money or lives lost of the Pentagon. That's highly problematic. At State Department, Hillary Clinton may be the single worst pick that Obama has made, which is a pretty sweeping statement. She's been an unapologetic backer of the Iraq War. She promised to obliterate Iran. She manages an extremely large bureaucracy when she ran their worst managed presidential campaign in modern history. And don't forget that as senator from the state of New York, she's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Likud Party of Israel. She's a really, really bad pick to be a diplomat. It's simply not in her skill set. So there's that. There's Janet Napolitano to run the Department of Homeland Security as governor of Arizona. She was relatively good on immigration policy, and of course the DHS runs ICE and the Border Patrol, but she's somewhat troubling on a number of other issues. National Security Advisor is James Jones, who was a McCain backer during the election and wants to quote-unquote win the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Director of Central Intelligence, you have Leon Panetta, who's actually a relatively good pick for this this panoply of hawks, simply because he's not a CIA insider and has some experience with the politics of negotiating the intelligence community, both in as a White House advisor and in Congress. But you also have Susan Rice at UN as a hawk, and the Director of National Intelligence, Admiral Dennis Blair, who has human rights problems of his own from his time as the Director of the Pacific Command of the Navy during the time of the East Timor. He basically undermined the Clinton efforts to hold the Indonesians accountable during the genocide of East Timor. So all of these basically add up to extremely troubling and extremely conservative picks. Social services, on the other hand, is relatively good, and just to very briefly hit some of the highlights from that, you have Arne Duncan, the Department of Education, is probably the worst of the picks. This should sound relatively familiar. He's been battling parent groups for years on his over-reliance of testing, his contempt for public input, and his school closure policies. Should sound very familiar. Yep. On the other hand, Department of Health and Human Services, Tom Daschle is in good position to put through Obama's relatively flawed, but it would still be a dramatic improvement, health care reform. The Department of Housing and Urban Development, Sean Donovan, ran the public housing in New York City, which is actually one of the better such programs in the country. You have the Department of Labor, Hilda Solis, a former representative from California, a longtime labor activist, and the Department of Veterans Foreign Affairs, General Eric Shinseki. That name may sound familiar. He was the person who told the Bush administration that that they needed several hundred thousand troops in order to win in Iran, and was summarily drummed out of the military by Iraq, rather, and was summarily drummed out of the military by Bush. Neocons for his troubles.
For telling the truth.
And so what this, aside from the fact that he can run the Department of Veteran Affairs very well, what this tells military leaders under Obama is that their professional opinions will in fact be valued and be respected. And that probably makes him the single best pick of the Obama cabinet.
I agree.
But that isn't saying a whole lot, unfortunately.
No.
All right. So, getting back to the economy and...
One last thing. Friday, we saw a second bailout for Bank of America, got another $20 billion from the Treasury. This is after they went to the government and said, remember when we bought Merrill Lynch back when Lehman Brothers was in trouble? Well, it turns out we can't actually complete the sale unless we get help. So they got an extra $20 billion from the government in order to complete their purchase of Merrill Lynch. In other words, basically the CEO of Bank of America said, give us the money or we're going to drop Merrill Lynch, and then you're going to have to bail out Merrill Lynch. This is interesting because Bank of America is the largest bank in the U.S. We also saw this week that the third largest bank in the United States, Citigroup, split into two. Basically, they said, we're going to take what's profitable, our retail banking and our credit card business, put that in one company, and then we're going to ditch everything else that's a problem, put that in another company, and if it fails, fine, then we'll still have something left that's profitable, and we'll let the government deal with the half of us that's a problem. So
what was the old quote that to rob a bank is nothing next to owning one?
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, essentially what we're seeing is the worst part of nationalization when the government refuses to take a controlling interest in banks and take a hand in running them and make sure that they're not being run just for the benefit of shareholders and the CEOs, then you get instances like this where the profitable assets are going to get held back and remain the property of the shareholders, and the troubled assets are going to get dumped on the public balance sheet. The Treasury will have to take control of them. And in that vein, Henry Paulson suggested on Friday that the U.S. government set up what he called an aggregator bank, or what other media people are calling the bad bank. In other words, the public bank that will take control of all of the bad assets and make the public treasury eat the loss that all of these wealthy CEOs ran up in their time as the irresponsible heads of these enormous banks.
Meanwhile, they go on to other cushy jobs somewhere else.
Exactly.
And will the aggregator bank. Will that have ATMs here locally?
Oh, no.
We won't be
able to get any money out of it. We'll be pouring money into it, definitely.
That's what I was thinking. All right, moving on to international and the continuing situation in Gaza.
Yeah, it's really amazing, isn't it, how not only is Israel suddenly interested in a ceasefire with 3 days left in the Bush administration, because, of course, we've already learned that this operation had been planned for several months, and you know that it had the blessing of George Bush and that it was timed to take advantage of his leaving office and before Obama could have any influence on it. But you also had Condi Rice yesterday cutting a last-minute deal, even while her staffers were packing up their belongings in boxes in the West Wing. Condi Rice making a deal to increase military cooperation, expanded intelligence cooperation, I believe is the exact quote, with the Israeli intelligence services and Mossad in Gaza and the Middle East. And you really wonder what kind of deals are being cut behind closed doors. Meanwhile, a number of credible reports emerging of Israel using white phosphorus, which is a chemical weapon banned under international law, on civilian populations in Gaza. The death toll well over 1,000 now, and international outrage notably lacking here in the United States, certainly in the media coverage, which has been just plain abominable.
Yeah, no, and they keep reiterating, well, Israel's doing this in self-defense, et cetera, because of Hamas and their rockets. Well, let's not forget that Israel had put the Gaza Strip under under a quarantine and not allowed any goods in and not allowed people out to their jobs even. Gaza residents were suffering under privation long before the Israeli invasion, and now that they're seeing daily rocket fire, civilians are being targeted alongside so-called military targets, including which also this week the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, stepped into the same arena as Al Qaeda in Iraq and managed to bomb a UN headquarters in Gaza, even though they had the coordinates of the UN headquarters.
No,
and
because they had the coordinates.
Yeah, knew they were not supposed to bomb it. They did, and they used white phosphorus when they did, which meant that 700 refugees had to be evacuated, many of them with injuries. And that they also managed to bomb a Red Crescent hospital as well, which they had the coordinates for. But things are so bad now for the civilian population in Gaza that most people don't have electricity. The clean water is running out. Surgeons at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City are having to do procedures by the light of cell phones because they don't have adequate lighting. I mean, we're not getting this as news here in the United States, but you can read it in the European press, and it is sickening.
All right. That then leaves us with this week's events.
Yeah. Once again, this week will be a protest against the invasion of Gaza that will be at noon at Westlake Park. Go down there and make a lot of noise. Monday is MLK Day. There will be the annual events at back at Garfield High School this year now that it has been rebuilt. There will be a 9:30 workshops, 11 o'clock rally, and a march at noon. And then on Tuesday, Inauguration Day, Eat the State is having a benefit that'll be at the Comedy Underground. It's Safe to Laugh Now, Piggy Platt, the headliner act. That's in Pioneer Square. It starts at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $12 at the door. They're $10 in advance if you want to stop by in the next couple days at Not a Number Books and Gifts in Wallingford on North 45th Street. And it is all ages, so Comedy Underground used to be 21 and over, but that's changed in recent weeks, so come on down, regardless of age.
And as well, there is at the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action.
Yes.
They are rebuilding from the ground up their facility there, and are doing sheetrocking this weekend, and could greatly use the help of some people who have strong backs to come in and help them hold the heavy sheetrock up. So that
folks may remember that their facility next to the Bangor nuclear base was burned to the ground in a suspicious fire, as the terminology goes. Several years ago, they've been raising money and doing plans and getting permits, and they're finally building the building, and so they need help to get that done.
So you can help out. It's free lunch if you're doing some lifting. All right. So with
sounds
that
sounds fair.
It's although, as Maria was pointing out, sheetrocking is hard work. All right, talking as we do every week with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State comes out every couple of weeks with local and national, international news. As I mentioned, this current issue and this next issue, we have an extensive rundown of Obama's cabinet picks and what you can expect from our 44th president, which is, you know, it's certainly a step up from what we've had, but still highly concerning in a lot of areas. But you're not getting that information in the mainstream media, but that's what we're here for. You can find Eat the State wherever you find free publications, bookstores, cafes, King County Library System. It is an all-volunteer-run publication, hence the benefit on Tuesday night. You can also find us on the web at www.eatthestate.org. And if you'd like to volunteer for our all-volunteer publication, also we'll be tabling, by the way, at the MLK event at Garfield. If you want to stop on by and meet us, or meet us on Tuesday night. If you want to help out, or if you have comments or questions or feedback on any of this, you can email us at info@eatthestate.org.